Herzlich willkommen zu Executive Stories, dem Podcast über die Werdegänge von Berliner Führungspersönlichkeiten aus der Medien- und Digitalwirtschaft. Unsere Aufgabe ist es, herauszufinden, was sie antreibt, bewegt und welche Erfahrungen und Anekdoten sie an uns weitergeben können. Executive Stories ist ein Podcast von Medianet Berlin-Brandenburg, produziert mit freundlicher Unterstützung von Cluster IKT, Medien- und Kreativwirtschaft und der Deutschen Telekom. Viel Spaß beim Anhören.
Hi, today's episode is in English, because today I'm meeting Paul Larsen. Paul is the managing director of publishing for EMEA at Epic Games, the games company making constant headlines with their very innovative game Fortnite. The last time I met Paul was 5 years ago. We met at an esports event, and at that time he had just changed from a career in business consulting to the games industry because of his love for games and sports. And to be honest, at the time, he struck me as a little bit stiff and businessy. And if you look at his CV, it really looks like Paul is the prototype performance business leader. And this is also true. But in preparing for this interview, I sensed a complex layer structure. I found out that he loves building teams. And if you build teams, you have to have a passion for people, right? And you can't only be a heartless number cruncher. So how could he go beyond his original proclivity to a deep understanding of teams, people, and culture? And how did he gain the courage to make a change from a safe gig in business and consulting to his passion, the games industry? I found out that Paul's philosophy is that you should always be pushing yourself. What exactly does he mean by that? Let's find out together in today's episode. Hi, Paul Larsen. Welcome.
Thank you, Simon.
You are the MD of International Publishing EMEA at Epic Games. That's who you are on paper, on LinkedIn. What do you say to somebody when you meet somebody new, let's say, and they ask you, who are you? What do you do?
Well, I think that you're not wrong. That is what LinkedIn says. I think it really depends on the setting we're in. I think, you know, in a professional setting, it's typically what you do right now. So, you know, my introduction wouldn't be that different from what you just said. But again, I think context matters a lot. So depending on the topic, you know, we could go in many different directions.
Hmm. What might be some of the other things that you might have said to people?
You know, less so than especially your title. I think titles are meaningless today. That's my honest opinion on that. I would rather talk about, you know, what drives me, you know, what drives me as an individual, you know, what are important things to me, you know, what are my challenges. Those are kind of the things that I like to jump straight into. I like substance, you know, and that's probably, you know, even working in a North American company where culture is much more about, you know, the small talk and introduction conversation and stuff like that. I like to kind of jump into some of the meaty stuff because I think that's, you know, that's what interests me.
Then let's just jump into that. And you know, we're meeting right now in a way. What are the things that are on your mind right now and are important to you right now?
I think there's a lot of things on my mind. You know, COVID aside, because I don't want that to be to be a dominating, you know, topic of our conversation, but I think there's a lot of things on my mind. I think if you look around and see how things are changing, and you know, just before we started out here, you know, we had a brief conversation. I think these big black swan events, more than anything, forces humankind and us as individuals to rethink our approach to how we do things and kind of challenge our worldviews. And that spills into not just, you know, privately, but definitely also professionally. So, you know, what are some of the opportunities? So not just, you know, the negative side of things, but also what are some of the opportunities to invoke change? And is the current situation accelerating the need to solve certain problems more than others? So I think in that sense, there's a lot on my mind. I'm at Epic right now. Epic's gone through a tremendous journey. Since I arrived, which is, I think, roughly 4.5 years ago, it was a very different company back then. Lots of challenges, right? And I think for all of us at any given time, if we look past our day-to-day, I think there's tons of challenges that needs to be solved. I think there's a lot on my mind.
It's a very broad spectrum, and we will get deeper into some of the things. Of course, to clarify, you mentioned Black Swan event. I know that word. I know it from Nassim Taleb. He writes about it as kind of unforeseen events that change the course of the world. I guess that's probably your definition too.
Yes.
Just maybe for the avid listener. That's what we've seen with Corona right now.
That's what we've seen with Corona. And I think, I find these moments in time exceptionally fascinating, because I think what ends up happening is, there's not, I think as we've progressed as species, I think, the concept Darwinism is changing. But I think the Black Swan events, more than anything, highlights, who has the ability to reinvent themselves, their industry and their business and them as individuals, right? Because one of the things I've found kind of as I got more experience and grew up, professionally, has been a lot of experiences, people will tell you, they'll tell you, oh, change is hard, right? And if you're young and you're ready to conquer the world, that sounds really daunting. And just, what do you mean experiences or change is hard? Mm. But as you get older and kind of your experience helps define who you are, how you approach problems, how you think about things, change is hard, and it's an exercise you have, or it's an ability you have to constantly exercise, right?
Yeah.
To be comfortable with it when it then happens. So I think, these Black Swan events, more than anything, helps sharpen and define who are the winners going into then the next period of stability, right? And who are going to be some of the guys, not making it. So I see it as an opportunity. But of course, it has a huge human and cost for society in this very moment what happens. But I think it's part of evolution, and that's why it fascinates me. But of course, it's also very concerning. All the people, all the companies, all the individuals that it impacts negative.
It's interesting because you started the argument with the word Darwinism as well, and that's kind of the point I see, is that you're saying this shows, to survive in a time like this, survive and thrive, you need change more than stability, or it's like you're talking about anti-fragility. You can take a punch and get stronger from it, and that's kind of the, if I get you right, that's the prime prime element that determines success now. And I feel the same way. I feel like, seeking change proactively as well, and like not getting stuck or not being stiff and brittle, but kind of being supple and flexible, is kind of the thing that you want to be. You want to change. You want to change before the Black Swan comes.
Or you want to react very fast when it comes and take advantage of it. Right.
And how can you do that? Take advantage of it.
I think so much of success today, right? And remember, this is my subjective and somewhat limited world perspective, right? Mm-hmm. So much of that is how you build your organization and what type of people you bring in and what type of culture you build, right? If you bring a culture of constant urgency, and, you know, decision promptness, if there's such a thing, right? The ability to make quick decisions. And there's going to be tons of elements in this, right? But overall, I think it's how you build your organization, how you build the culture and the type of people you bring in that enables you to do that. And when I think about kind of the business landscape, right? My biggest fears the Blockbuster story is a famous one, right? And how, you know, Netflix today is so successful, right? But I think the big mistake a lot of people do is saying, well, that could never happen to me, right? We live in Germany and I originally come from Denmark, where I think digitalization is so much further ahead. But what is interesting to me to see is now in Germany, you know, digital businesses are actually seeing a lot of growth, right? Because suddenly it's like, well, it is convenient. So even though unpleasant, it forces adoption into groups of people where, you know, they wouldn't have done it otherwise. But kind of coming back to your question, I think it is probably one of the most difficult things to build a company that is truly agile in its approach, right? Because companies as individuals, we get extremely path dependent based on what brought us success, you know, previously. And I think the hardest part is wiring your brain and your culture to fully embrace that what made you successful yesterday won't necessarily make you successful tomorrow, right? Because it's such an ingrained part of your DNA.
We've always done it like that. Let's do it again.
Right? Like, look, this got us all the way up to here. And now you're telling us that, this doesn't work anymore. We have to do this. I think it's very counterintuitive to how we like to think. And I think that's why there's only so many who can view these type of rather tragic or challenging times and then see opportunity. But I think somebody did a study where they showed, you know, some of the strongest businesses, you know, were grown out of times where it was really difficult, right?
Yeah.
The last financial crisis. So I do think there's something about that, because if you can exist or even thrive in a harsh environment, like, you are fully capable of growing when everything, you know, is good and it's a lot easier. And I think that's kind of coming back to success in terms of from a business perspective. You know, showcasing growth the last 10, 12 years, we've just had, more or less, you know, a hockey stick of growth across the board. It's not really an achievement in itself, right? But coming out of this experience,
yeah,
with a solid foundation and positioned yourself for growth, you know, to take advantage of the next period, I think, you know, that characterizes actual ability and skill.
What's the time in your life where you learned that, what you're talking about right now? Because my assumption is, you know, you didn't enter the world and were, you know, prepared for change and hard times. And I feel like from listening to you, there must be a period that must have really shaped this view of yours. You must have probably seen quite some adversity.
I think most people see adversity in their lives just because life is complicated. Life is difficult.
Quite.
Right? I think how you overcome that is a lot about kind of your mental fortitude and how you approach those kind of challenges. And I don't think necessarily so, you know, if I look back when there was a big financial crisis, right, I was in consulting.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was...
What was your job there? What did you do?
So I was at a company called Bain & Company, which is an American strategy consulting house. So basically you follow the economy, right? If the economy is doing well, there's typically tons of stuff and interesting things to do because other companies are buying other companies, and, you know, CEOs are looking to build big strategies on how they can grow and how they can, you know, prosper. I mean, in hard times, you know, there's a lot of work to do where you need to cost and that sort of thing. But it's you know, those type of consultancies, they typically follow the trend. And, you know, we were coming off a tough 2008-9-ish, right? You know, I joined the company. A big part of that reason why people work 80 to 100 hours a week in that business is because they get paid very well, right? But of course, when there's no clients and no business, there's no bonuses. So, you know, coming into that, but post that, I actually was very positive, because then I came in where everything started to grow. So I would argue, from a professional perspective, this is my first experience of something, you know, that fundamental, you know, fundamentally impacting, you know, the world economy. But I think from a personal perspective, I think, you know, you know, life is difficult. And you kind of asked, when did I first encounter, like, how did I get that learning?
Yeah, what's the time in your life? What's the story where you saw, you know, it's not straightforward. I need to adapt here to come out of this. Well, I mean, most of us, I think, go into life with some sort of plan and are like, yeah, let's go that route. And I mean, we can talk about it more, but your CV is pretty, like, you know, business school, business companies. It's like, it has a straightforward nature, yet you display an understanding of high complexity.
So thanks. I actually think I would put it as I'm not very complex actually as an individual, but I would say, you know, if you look at on, you know, my resume, you know, post business school, it is fairly straightforward. You know, there's some considerations there, but it's relatively straightforward. I think a lot of the learnings happened before, right? I was fortunate in a young age to see entrepreneurship from the inside. I think entrepreneurship, building your own company, is probably the people I have the utmost respect for. I probably also realized it's not necessarily the right path for me, where my skill set, you know, comes to its fullest. And I might be, hopefully I'm wrong, and maybe I get that opportunity at some point, but that's not really, you know, where I can apply at least a lot of the skill set that I have right now. But I have the deepest respect for people building their own companies, because that is just inherently 200 times more difficult than coming in and optimizing something, or, you know, coming in and being part of a journey that's somewhat charted out for you, right? And where there is resources, you know, there is a lot of comfort. You know, starting your own company, and I'm trying to do it a couple of times, you know, with varying outcomes, but it's really difficult. You learn so much, like, stuff you can't put on the CV, right? I think a lot of people say, well, Bain & Company, oh, that's impressive on the CV. But if you see somebody who started their own company and made it somewhat successful, which means that, you know, it existed for a period of time, I think the challenges you have to solve are so different and so harder, because oftentimes you have to solve them yourself.
And you were part of a company that was founded at 15, right?
When I was younger, one of my best friends were about 10 years older than me. So, you know, he finished as an engineer. And I was still in high school, so I was probably 16, 17 or something like that, right? And back then, so that was in that was in 2000-ish, so around the .com bubble. And I've happened to know how to do really basic web pages. I mean, that was back in the days where HTML was the gold standard. I mean, there was nothing fancy. And I knew how to use Photoshop, so I could basically help build the company's first website. And I hope that there is no examples of what that looks like alive today, because it was probably horrible. But that gave me kind of a first row seat to how to start a company. And I would say, you know, that company was relatively successful. It built on the idea of, it was back in the days where CPU speeds would basically double, I think, every 8 months, which is referred to today and back then as Moore's Law, I think CEO of Intel. And, you know, the idea from our perspective, or where we saw an opportunity, was twofold. One, if you cooled them, because they were typically built to be able to operate at much higher clock frequencies that they were sold at. So if you could cool them sufficiently, and this is back in the days where water cooling was an anomaly, right? You would never buy that in a, you know, built into a default desktop computer. So you know,
where today it's quite normal.
But back then that was completely new. So the company or my friend and a couple of his friends who were all, you know, engineers, they developed different types of cooling solutions in the lifetime of that company. And the idea was initially just to develop it for like a niche market, and then they were able to extract a lot more power out of these CPUs, right? As everything else, a niche market is never in. Well, that's not true. If you want to see operating in niche markets is, you know, it's typically difficult, right? Because you have such a small customer base, and you know, it just really puts a cap on opportunity. So I think quickly the idea was, hey, if this trend continues, passive cooling, which was just a simple fan you'd slap onto your CPU, for average desktops is also not going to cut it. So the idea was, of course, to develop something that could take over once that would occur. Now, for a lot of reasons, that never occurred. Like, technology just went into a different direction. Yeah. And by that time, I wasn't part of the company, right? But I think that gave me some really good learnings, more so on the personal front. But I think it's often what shapes you as a person kind of help dictates how you operate professionally. I think those two, you know, the talk about separating your personas and, oh, now I'm at work, so now I'm this, versus I've, at least for myself, I found that extremely difficult. I think they're very interconnected.
Yes.
I think if you believe in authenticity, I think it's absolutely important that there's a harmony. I think to the judgmental of my daughter sometimes, right? Like, I've tried to apply the same philosophy to a certain extent, you know, at work and in private sphere. So I think a lot of how I view things have been shaped by that experience. I did a lot of sports as a you know, when I was younger, and that those type of approaches to problems, to tackling adversity, I think are developed out of those experiences.
What does your daughter judge you for?
I think she finds me very strict and output focused. I'm not so interested in her process and, you know, how difficult it was to get to a point, right? Mm. But, you know, she's judged on the result that she brings to the table. Mm. You know, and anyways, you know, it's yeah, I think it's important that you know, there's harmony between those two personas, right?
Yeah.
Because I you know, in this today, I think it's so important that people are authentic about who they are and how they operate and how they want to operate.
And back then, which I think is a great example, you started working with friends and you learned some pretty significant lessons back then already.
I think I did. You know, I think the friend perspective, I had this conversation with an acquaintance as well, who's actually quite successful, you know, where I think on you know, one of the social medias, he was like stating, no, you should always hire friends because it's much more fun to work with them and you know them already. And I challenged that based on my experiences, for example, right? Because, I mean, we started out as friends and we didn't part as friends, you know, primarily because of my immaturity at that point in time, which is you don't see it as you're in it, but again, come reflection. And, you know, I really challenge that. You know, there's always exceptions to the rule, but I think most of the time you should never start a company with friends. And then why do I say that? I say that I think there's a varying degree of friends, but I also think if you are aware of the pitfalls up front and you actually sit down and talk about them, then it's a different ball game. I think the challenge for us were we started out as friends, you know, we were working, we were hanging out, everything was just blending together, right? But then when disagreements happen, and there will always be disagreements, we never had that kind of clear path. People weren't aligned on, well, actually, this is the guy who's making the tough and unpopular decisions. And, you know, that's how it is. So, you know, as it got tough and there was a lot of conflict, you know, one person or the one running it basically ended up kind of seeming as the bad guy, right? Because he was tough on a couple of the other guys. And then as I've gotten similar responsibility, you know, later in my life, I'm like, wow, that couldn't have been fun what he had to do, but he did it because it was the right thing to do, right? Where, you know, back then I was like, well, it's not as fun anymore. We're not hanging out anymore. Yeah, yeah, you know, people, this is just work.
Yeah.
And naturally, you know, if you're, and I was just part-time because I was finishing high school, you know, you want more fun than you want work, really. Yeah. So I think that was an interesting learning.
I have a question for you there, because I'm starting a company with friends right now. What kind of what are three things that I should watch out for, that I should make sure is set in stone up front, or at least understood by all?
I think there has to be clear roles and responsibilities, right? You know, how do we work through disagreements, right?
That's also a factor that you need in every relationship. You need to know when you're in a disagreement and not from it judge your the core of your relationship. Everybody gets into a disagreement, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
And the ability to do that, I think if there are, depending on the type and amount of history between individuals, that can be really, really difficult or really beneficial. Mm. But I think, yeah, having clear roles and responsibilities, you know, if we get to this point, who makes the decision, right? And being very clear up front that then you disagree and commit. And I think that as you pointed out before, that's something, you know, even now I think is absolutely crucial for anybody, you know, hoping to grow their career and grow themselves, is there's going to be tons of times where you're going to disagree with something. Sometimes you can change it, sometimes you can't. And the ability to buy into something that isn't your idea and trust the people that do it, and let's say it doesn't work, right? Not, you know, post that, just, I told you so, because that really doesn't do anything, no. Any good. Again, a lot of it is maturity, but it's also self-confidence, right? I've been wrong, I think, just as many times, if not more, than I've been right. But I think the learnings that I try to deduct in both cases is exactly the same. Okay, why was I actually right? Did everything turn out the way I thought they would based on the, you know, the work I did? Or, you know, why didn't I see this?
All you're telling is still very much the same theme from the beginning, what we talked about. It's kind of like learning through change or learning to change. And it's like you don't celebrate a success and you don't cry over a loss. You just look at both with kind of like a stoic eye and see it and are like, okay, what made this good? What made this bad? How can we do it better, different? The same with, you know, living in times of difficulty, e.g. a disagreement or a pandemic. It's like, can you live in it? Can you sit in it? Can you relax into it and, you know, sail the stormy waters? I feel like it feels to me that's a lot of the core of what you're saying. It's kind of like...
Yeah, but I think if I should try to put a theme around it, I think, you know, being in control of your emotions, right?
Mm.
And I say that in a way where... which is, I think the most difficult thing in life, just kind of lifting it up at a different level, is that nothing is black and white, right?
Yes.
Because when I say control your emotions, I also think it's very important that you're genuinely passionate and interested in what you're doing and you care, right? But still being able to control your emotions is such a crucial part of that, because, you know, not the opposite of that, right? Never really buys you anything. And I think that kind of plays into what we talked about, which is, don't be too concerned, you know, with a win or a loss, right? It's really the learning you deduct and how you then move forward. Because if you never fail, you are for sure not developing either developing at all or developing fast enough. Like, you should always be pushing yourself to the point where you feel a little bit uncomfortable, right? I think the biggest thing that hinders people, young and old, is the luring issue of being comfortable and being content, right? So you could argue even mastery is a dangerous thing, because once you get really good at a thing, it becomes so easy just to fall into that trap and just keep doing that over and over again, right? But again, I think what anything that showed me is, if you're standing still, you're technically going backwards, because there's tons of people who are moving forward. And I've seen it even, you know, successful, you know, peers of mine, they fall into this trap.
How does that happen?
I that's a question I can't answer, because I ask myself that question. It's like, wow, you're given so much opportunity. You're in such a, you know, unique spot. Why are you just settling down? Like, you know, why are you not quote unquote giving up, but, you know, why are you not constantly pushing yourself? And I think some of it is mentality. I think it's a lot about mentality. And some of it, I mean, back to what we started out with, some of it is just, I think people get tired, right? Because constantly pushing yourself and thereby your surroundings as well, right? Whether it's, you know, people that work for you, people you work with, people who are above you, it's hard, right? And I think the only thing I've seen constant is it's all, in reality, it's always day one, right? I think if you stop and celebrate, and if what matters to you is kind of celebrating victories, you quickly get, you know, you lose your you know, you're not humble anymore, and I think arrogance and hubris very quickly creeps in, right? Mm. And I look at some of the products I was lucky enough to work on, right? Like League of Legends, super successful, you know, PC game, esports, now Fortnite. And it's so easy to think you cracked it, right? But in a fast-moving industry, like, things can change in a heartbeat, right? So if you aren't constantly hungry and driving, so what's the next big thing? What's the next big challenge we can solve? You know, what's the next genre coming out? I mean, you're going to be overtaken. I really find it a lot easier, and there is moderation to this, to becoming number one. It's a lot harder to staying number one. For that, you need humility and you need, you know, hunger and drive, because I guarantee you there's tons behind you that has that and who wants to overtake you. And I think that's just daunting on some people. I think people have a certain mileage, like cars, right? And at some point, there's just no more gas in the tank. And then people are like, well, you know, life's pretty good. You know, I like spending time with family. You know, I like, you know, with Germany, we have, what, 4 or 5 weeks paid vacation. Like, there's so many things where it's like, it's convenient to give up, right? It's almost the Navy SEAL concept, right? Where you have to go ring the bell, right? Like, you're almost encouraged to ring that bell, you know, in life. And I think there's just some people who have that drive and that hunger to keep trying new things, you know, who wants to move forward. And I think, you know, in recruiting, those are the people you should try to find, whether they are a 20-year veteran or they are just fresh out of school, right? Because those are the people who will change your organization and the trajectory of your business.
Mm. And it's very interesting because, you know, on one hand, advocating for this pushing yourself and constantly seeing new ways of moving forward. At the same time, you know, what we just talked about in the sound check is kind of like this, what about, you know, consciously taking a break? My feeling, and I'm curious about your thoughts, is like that it's more a function of consciousness. You know, if you're saying, well, okay, there's no more gas in my tank, let me stay where I am and just kind of coast, that I feel like that's kind of what you're addressing. That's not really cool. But actually, it seems like it would be much better to take a very conscious break and like remove yourself from the game that, you know, whatever your position might dictate, and say, okay, my game is a different one. I'm now taking a 1 year, 2 year break. Clearly, I already know your thoughts a little bit on it, but you're not one-sided on this. I mean, you're not advocating to just push yourself to the limit. There are other ways to act.
Yeah, I agree with what you said. I think once you fall into the convenience notion, right? And I would say, you know, a lot of people can do that based on past laurels or something like that. I think then that's the real trap, because that isn't reflection, right? That's just basically lowering your ambition level and your passion and your drive, right? To be okay, right? To be content with how things are, right? And that will start showing across. I think it's important to root yourself up. You know, when I left Bain, I joined one of the clients I work for, mm-hmm. right? Which was, you know, different, very different. But it was also, it's a different tempo. you know, I got to work on some of the stuff that I built it as an you know, executive advisor, but now I suddenly had to work with it. And that was an eye opener. But doing that, I was fully aware, right? I'm going from 60, 80 hour work weeks, right? Sometimes 100, to, you know, 40 to 50, right? And to me, that's almost a part-time job, right? So that gave me a good time to reflect, and it gave me, allowed me to see the other side of the coin, right? And I think what you did, like pulling the plug, is super important, because however it works for you, you have to find a way where you can fully focus on reflection, you know, really, you know, asking yourself some of those deep questions, and they take time to you know, work through mentally. You know, what is it actually? What is important to me? What does drive me? And I think every time that I've, you know, swapped career, done something differently, or made big decisions, right? You know, leaving Denmark to me was a big decision back then, right? Because it is your social and professional network. It's been really beneficial. First of all, because it's a struggle, right? You're starting your own company, right? Like, you're going to get tons of challenges and struggles that you have to overcome. But you know, I think it's super important to find what works for you. And because you I think that the number one thing that makes people successful is passion and drive, right? And if you don't have that, you need to get that back. And I do think it can vary even for what you would quote unquote call very ambitious people.
When you did that move that you just described, when you went from Bain to one of your clients and you had a part-time job by your standards, and you could move into reflection, what were the results of it? What did you come up with in that time? And how did it, because from that, I believe you made the move away from Denmark into the gaming industry. Yep. And changed your whole trajectory. So can you tell us about that process on your side?
Yeah. First of all, I think it was great reflection. I think I had a lot of, there was a lot of unforeseen benefits as well that I didn't see. I probably have one of the best leaders. You know, I work for one of the best leaders I have. Like, what a great human person, right? Somebody who took personal interest, you know, really cared, really supported me.
Who was that and where?
So he's a guy called Kel, and he was my boss, director of strategy at that client that I then moved to.
Yeah.
So I really saw what compassionate leadership really is. And I mean, he had a personality and some skill set that I don't have. But you're still trying to draw on some of those experiences.
What were those experiences you had with him? What did you learn from him?
I think I learned the importance of, or I wouldn't say learn, because at least I definitely don't master that, right? But, you know, he really showed to me the ability to manage a really diverse team, right?
He gave you access to that?
Yeah, because the group that he was managing was a really, you know, a bunch of different disciplines, very different individuals, right? Some were clearly there from 8 to 4, and that was their scope, right? Some liked to come in, and they knew exactly what they were doing from Monday to Friday, right? But then he also had the strategy piece of that, right, where we, you know, wanted to go out in the world and just change how the company operated from day one, right? So it was a very different group, right, that was still a, you know, in due to him, it was still a unit. I think he was a real role model in terms of how you work with people, and you always felt like he cared, and he cared about everybody who worked for him. He cared about all the different projects that were running, which were very different. I think that's an important skill set to. Well, and then I think what he really did well was, you know, he would sit at senior leadership meetings, sure, but he would still be enough into details of what people were working on that you sense that he cared about what you were doing.
When you were telling him something, he probably could
roll with you and riff with you. He could provide feedback. Yeah. He read the documents you sent him, right? Like, he was prepared. And not just for me, but for, you know, anybody who would like involve him in a conversation. And I really try to do that to the same extent. And I get a lot of emails, and there's a lot of different projects running all the time. So I'm not as successful as he was at doing that. But I think that's super important.
It gave you access and perspective to a different type of leadership that's not innate to you.
That's not innate to me.
So you could emulate it to a degree, at least.
Yes. And I think that's, you know, there's the radical candor concept, right? But what I one of the sub things that I like from that book is, you know, you talk about in a successful organization, right? A lot of people, they want superstars, right? They want these 10x people, or at least they state they want that, right? I agree with the notion that, again, those are the ones that would really move your, you know, your organization into something completely unique, right? But I also think you have to appreciate, you know, what they've referred to as the rock stars, who basically built the foundation so that these people can go off and do amazing things, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's a little bit like, I use so many sports analogies because to me, there's a lot of similarities, right? Like, you don't want 11 Cristiano Ronaldos, right? Because that is not going to win you Champions League. So understanding how to put together a team that crosses all those boxes and make everybody feel like they're contributing to the win, you know, and making sure everybody develops. They'll develop at different pace and they'll develop in different, you know, directions. But as long as everybody is trying to achieve the same goal, I think that in itself is really what defines, you know, a great leader, a great people manager. But it's also very difficult because to do that, you, as I said before, you have to care about each individual and each of the projects they're running, right? Because, you know, a lot of times I will gravitate to whatever my boss tells me, oh, you know, you need, and that is, you know, going to be the first priority. But you have to understand that, you know, somebody doing a different initiative or project, for them, that is their main thing. And this is what they've been working on for months. And that is super important. So you can't just treat that as not important or as a less important thing. You have to be 100% present in the thing, and then it's better to say no. Like, you know, doing a 50% job, even if you feel like, you know, you're a smart individual, I think sometimes does a disservice, right?
Yeah. And it feels like I have to apologize. I brought you off track a little bit, but your boss at the time embodied that. As far as I feel like you're still in a way reflecting on him.
He did, right? Because think of where I came from, right? Which was consulting, where you didn't really have a boss. You swap more or less boss every time you get a new project, right? Yeah. And that's determined on so many things, available resources, you know, who's the client, because you're a generalist, right? So in that time, I had some people who were really, really smart. And I had some people where I'm like, wow, I want to saw my left leg off and just beat myself to death with it, right? Because this is so terrible.
Yeah, yeah. And so let's talk a little bit more about that's the track I feel like I brought you off. That was certainly a part of the reflection that you could undertake during your time at that new job at your client that you joined. What else did you reflect on? And can you maybe tell us a little bit how that then brought you to the big change from the industry you were in then into the gaming industry?
Yeah, you know, I got hungry. You know, sitting there,
Did they not feed you well?
They did, you know, within the realm of possibility. Things just, the speed was just very different, right? Mm. And it has to be when it's a large organization, right? And it's family owned, and there was just a lot of things. It you know, the speed was just different back then. I think, you know, the company today probably, you know, is I think moving in the right direction. I think after like 6-12 months, it was, you know, I was like, okay, I need something faster paced. You know, bigger challenges. You know, life was good. I was much better shape than I am today, for sure. So, you know, I was kind of, okay, what do you want? What do I want, right? And I oftentimes, for self-reflection, I write things down because it kind of, it for me, that forces the process of seeing things on paper. It's like, okay, there's like a track here professionally that I think I want to pursue, right? It was much more traditional, if you may. And then I was like, wow, here's a couple of passion things that I you know, I read the news about this. These are things that I really enjoy talking about, you know, for no particular reason. And I kind of started pursuing both of those because I wasn't sure.
And the latter were games and sports?
And the latter was games and sports, right? I always, you know, loved that. And that was never work to me. And I quickly realized, you know, football, you know, typically you do a career there. If you're an ex-professional, then you get hired and then they just hope you have a skill set and can do a job, right? Which is why I think most sports clubs today are run terribly because you're a great midfielder doesn't mean that you can do finance, right? And I mean, I'm exaggerating, but so yeah. I, you know, it's like, okay, that's not really a viable career path. And then gaming I found was quite difficult in general because there aren't that many, at least in Europe, right, for the big publishers, there weren't that many senior enough roles that didn't require you to have worked in gaming. So that was a bit of a challenge.
So that means that there were the senior roles that were put up were like you would have had to have worked in gaming for a while.
Yeah, I think that or you had to be in the US, right?
Okay.
Because if you look at Activision Blizzard, you look at, you know, a lot of the big companies back then, they were based out of the US, right? Or there's a lot in Japan and even some in Korea, right? There's not that many based out of Europe. You know, Germany was big, you know, when browser gaming, you know, took off, you know, that's the foundation of a lot of the great German game companies are built on, right? And then some mobile later on.
We like to do math while we play, right? And like fill out Excel tables while we play. Come on, that's the best way to game. Okay, I'm joking. Yeah.
Well, there's a lot of great spreadsheet games, quote unquote. Yeah. I enjoy those, right? Because they kind of cater to some of my skill set in gaming these days, where it's a little slower pace and it's about, you know, taking your meticulous time. My reactions aren't as great anymore. But you know, that's how I looked at it. And then suddenly there was an opportunity because what I saw was Riot Games. One of their co-founders was a Bain alumni, right? So he'd been at Bain. So I was like, okay, at least they should have some idea of the skill set, dude, you could bring to the table. I was very much into esports. I was part of something called Boomtown, which was back when esports wasn't esports, and that was also back in the early 2000s. So I had some experience with esports and always followed the scene. So I took a shot and I landed a job at Riot back then. So esports, I did some game publishing with some of the team, you know, around esports as well. Became my ticket into gaming, right? Because the reason Epic then, you know, the access to Epic came through, okay, well, you know, he has touched game publishing before, right? So I think a lot of how you chart your career is about making sure that when you make choices, you know, they open more doors than they close. So at least, you know, for me, the Riot and esports move was a very deliberate step to get your foot inside the door. And then Epic was, you know, I was fortunate with Epic, you know, they took a chance on me back then, and it worked out great. But yeah, those were my things. So I had those two kind of lined up, and I also tried to pursue kind of the other arm. But I was like, you know, if this doesn't work out, and that was when I was a lot younger than now, right? If this doesn't work out, I can always go back and do this, right? Because even if, you know, I spend a year in gaming and I say, wow, this is not really me, it's not that I stop being able to build Excel models or PowerPoints or put on a suit. So I felt at the time this was the right thing to do because I definitely felt if I moved further down the professional line and got established, and I think that's true with most things we do, unless you're willing to start yourself, because then you get to redefine your profile, your business. Then you know, as you get older, you get more and more locked into a certain path because that's your network, that's your CV, you know, that's your experiences.
Yes, and that's what you saw kind of on that left-hand path, and you took the shot at the right-hand path. And I would love to... You told me beforehand, when we spoke before, that when you started at Epic, you also had, we spoke about one of your mentors, which was your previous boss, but you also had a great mentor at Epic Games, who again taught you a lot. And I would love to hear that story because I feel like it's very elementary to, you know,
right,
sitting in this job and doing it with the passion that you're doing it.
Well, I think coming in to Epic, and if we look at the role today, I was so fortunate that, you know, the way everything happened, where we launched Paragon first, that weren't the commercial success we really wanted, and then Fortnite came in, and it became evident that we had to focus on that, right? But I had a good ramp-up period, if you could say so, right? Like, and because Epic hadn't published anything before, I came into a role where I got to go through all those learnings, right, and build those relationships early on. And I think the way I look at mentorship at Epic has been, I've probably seen some of the and this is counting, by the way, you know, top tier strategy consultants, I've probably seen some of the smartest people at Epic. But some, you know, I developed a relationship where I could just, you know, call them up and we could have really a one-to-one conversation. And those are, of course, super valuable. But I think a lot of what I learned from Epic is finding mentorship just by observing and interacting, right? So less of that kind of formal thing where it's like, okay, let's go for a cup of coffee and sit down and talk about my career development, or let's sit and talk about this problem I have, right? But seeing how, you know, Paul Meegan was the president back then who hired me is, you know, how does he think, right? Because a lot of the times, right, with my lack of experience or intelligence, right, I was like, I think we should do this, right? And Paul would go a different direction. He would say, no, we should do this, right? And I think at the time, I had a lot of business fundamentals built into me. I was very risk averse. I was like, you know, you should be careful taking big chances, right? Because yes, there's tons to gain, but what if you lose, right? And I think what he really distilled in me is, no, you should always go for the home run, because if you win, this is what you can get, right? And that is such a rare ability. And then I saw it in practice multiple times, right? Where, you know, Fortnite BR didn't go free to play initially. That was pushed, you know, from a set of individuals in the company, where I was like, no, the opportunity here is big. We should go free to play, which is, if you think about it, huge decision to make for a product, right? But if they hadn't made it, where would it be today, right?
Yeah.
Definitely not where it is today. And I saw multiple of these type of decisions where his batting average, if you want to use like a sports analogy, is just super high, right? And every time, like the common denominator is, he's not thinking about he's considering keeping the downside in mind, but he's really looking at what is the upside, right? How do we make the upside bigger or more likely to occur? And that's just a very different way of, you know, an optimization consultant, right? Who looks at, maybe we can increase 2% here and 5% here, right? And it's like, yeah, that's great, right? Wow, like, what if you could triple this, right? Like, that should be the conversation. So you know, him and we have another person who's still at the company, right? Who is just very, very fact-based and very, you know, he pushes the organization forward, right? But he never does it in a way that he wouldn't do himself, right? So I found that authenticity, and he, more than anybody, showed me the power of execution, which if you come as a strategy consultant building PowerPoint decks, you typically suck at execution because that's other people's problem. And I was always like, wow, if you just make the best analysis ever, like that's the most important thing. And I was like, today I'm like, that doesn't even matter. It does have a certain value and it does have its place, but what matters is how can you turn, you know, ideas into action, right? So, you know, one of the things I adopted is, hey, if it's worth doing tomorrow, it's worth doing today, right? No, this issue, we don't do it first thing tomorrow. We start working on it today. And the power of pushing the organization to do things now, get it done, like make it better, that relentless focus on detail, even at a senior level, I found was, wow, you know, you can like him as a person or not, but you have to respect what he brings, the momentum, the speed, the sense of urgency. And I think especially if you think about Fortnite as it blew up, having somebody who's constantly pushing people to not sit back and just enjoy the ride, I think was super crucial.
What were some things in the Fortnite ramp up or rapid growth time where that came into action? I mean, I'm sure it came into action all the time, but maybe a story comes to mind where you were really on the ball.
Yeah, I can't give any details on specific situations, but you have to imagine, right, that, you know, we didn't publish anything meaningful before, right? Like, you know, Paragon was many, many, many times smaller, right? So once you get to that scale, you get to it very quickly, like things will break, right? And the thing about games as a service or software as a service, you know, why it has so much opportunity potential, the same things that makes it kind of daunting sometimes to work on, right? Because if you don't fix a thing, millions of players can't play, can't buy, can't, you know, have a suboptimal experience, right? And so much of our cadence is like, yeah, like we'll put it on the list and we'll get to it. It's like, no, who do we get together now to solve this problem that's happening? And we don't close it out, like we don't stop working on it until it's solved. And once you see that in action and how quickly people can, like, things can move, you almost become addicted to it. You know, because what I was, you know, used to is, you know, previous was, oh, we made a plan, right? And you presented the plan to 25 people or a million people, right? And everybody had comments and everybody had all the reasons why this wouldn't work, right? So to see something happening, it could take years from, you know, we develop a new pricing framework until that pricing framework was actually implemented in some sort of a in some way, right? And it was often a bunch of compromises, so it really didn't have any effect. Where here it's like, no, what is the optimal customer experience? It's that, okay, then that is what we're going for. When can we have that? Oh, you know, in a week's time. What about 3 days, right? And that really pushes people forward. And it's like in sports, right? If you don't push yourself, I mean, Michael Jordan probably didn't need a coach, right? There are great people that definitely needed a coach. Otherwise, they wouldn't have gotten nowhere, right? So if you have both people who are self-driven, but also somebody who can kind of set that goalpost and help push people towards that, I think you can get incredible results.
And that's certainly visible today. You know, Fortnite is testament to it. It's a rapidly changing virtual landscape, reaching new frontiers all the time.
I think so, but I think you can find, like, you know, from my fascination, for example, Amazon, I think there's some of that same, you know, mentality, Netflix, right? I think a lot of the companies who are successful and really builds a foundation for the future, I think they have to adapt some of those, like some of these thinkings, right? Like time gets compressed even more. I think that's just a, you know, back in the days, right? If you would market a game and it would go to retail, right? Your campaign started 6, 8, 10 months ahead, right? And now, you know, you'll launch a season and, you know, if you're starting 4 weeks before, you know, you're pretty well off. So,
yeah.
And I think that's true in most things in life. Like, it's just things get so compressed, which is, I think, why so many people are feeling like it's hard to cope with, right? Because the speed is just relentless. Yeah.
Yeah. There are countless more topics to explore. It's so interesting. I have the strong feeling that we are just now getting started in a way, in a focused way in this conversation. Yet we are pretty much on time, and I would I'm very thankful to your insights. You're clearly a very thoughtful person, and I would love to hear you speak more about many different things. I hope many people listen to this, and I hope we brought out some nice learnings. And for the end, I would love to ask you just some quick fire questions that I would ask you to answer somewhat quickly, but they are not simple. Do you think you're ready for them?
I will do my best.
All right. What would you say is your purpose as a leader?
I think my purpose, my primary purpose, is to bring direction, right? Because overall, people are smart, right? And people can do what needs to be done, but you need to show them where to go.
And what inspires you?
Wow, these are tough questions. What inspires me? To win, right? Ambitious goals. Like, I operate very poorly, you know, if there isn't success and failure. Again, because what really drives me is probably learning. And if you don't have a win condition, it's very hard to deduct, you know, whether or not you were successful or not.
What are three books that have impacted you and that you would like to recommend to others? And it can
that,
be
that's tough. I think my favorite that just comes to mind, yeah, every time is Work Rules.
Work Rules?
Yeah. Because I think there's so many of the ideas around how Google kind of built their culture that should be mandatory reading for anybody who has to deal with people, performance management, like performance of people, and scaling an organization. Like, there's so many good lessons to be learned in that book. I there's a lot of books I like bits and pieces of it, but I find what they're trying to convey, like there's too many pages. I guess that's how the payment model works if you publish an American book, because it matters how many pages you actually write. And then I find just biographies as a whole really inspiring, because the way I really learn is to, like what you and I do, is hearing other people's thoughts, you know, experiences, history, and decision process. So people who can be really blunt, you know, when they tell their story, I find is I have an easier time to relate to.
Mm. What is the change you would like to see in the world?
It was a more digital world. I guess that becomes almost too self-serving for the industry that I operate in. What would I like to see? Those are really tough questions. What would I like to see? I don't know. I would like to see, and this takes a political angle, I would like to see a world where people are better informed, and where the people who really drive, like, macro development are working for the better of everyone. And that's kind of a big deal. But I find, and this comes back to media and to, you know, the role of all the different stakeholders, I find that is one of the to me personally, I think one of the most concerning developments that I see is that being a politician is now a quote-unquote a job, right, where to me it's a question of you serve a bunch of people, right, and that means you have to make unpopular and tough decisions. It's not just about, you know, doing the things short-term that keeps you your job. And I think, you know, that kind of responsibility, and I mean, you see it also in businesses now, right, where leaders, and I hope it's for the majority very genuine, have a bigger responsibility than just quote unquote doing the job, right? Like, there are environment concerns that all should be on the forefront. You know, there's how do we create a more social, you know, society without taking away, you know, the opportunity for the few. I think there's so many tough things that needs to be solved, and where I see a lot of divide. So I think, you know, if anything, you know, it's less business related, it's not games related, it's not really a career perspective, but I think there's going to be big challenges being, you know, politicians of the future.
And my next question is, how do you contribute to the change that you just described, that you would like to see?
Well, I think, you know, and this is going to sound really silly, I think each of us, you know, it all starts with you,
yes,
right? So let's say you want to impact and, you know, being, you know, on the, help the environment, right? Well, you know, you sort your trash, right? You buy bio vegetables, right? You know, you go the extra mile, because if everybody does that, I mean, then problem solved, right? Like, and I think a lot of that is just taking ownership and responsibility of what you can do, because I think it's, you know, in everything in life, it's easy to point to all the things you can't impact, but there's tons of things that you can impact, and I think most meaningful change starts in the small, and then it grows bigger.
I really agree with that. Last question. What's on your bucket list? Something that you would like to see or do in your life that you haven't done yet?
I like to learn to play the piano. That's actually on my bucket list. I'm very questionable whether or not that will actually happen. I don't have a lot of places I want to see. I've been fortunate to travel a lot and see a lot of things. I don't have a professional checklist of things either.
Piano is good.
Playing the piano.
All right. I hope you can show me something the next time we see each other. Thank you, man. The last words are yours.
No, I just want to thank you, Simon. It's been a good reflection conversation for me as well. I hope somebody else finds any use of that conversation. But
I hope so too. We were a bit all over the place.
Yes. Yeah, we were all over the place. Yes. It feels like a very unstructured conversation, but I'm sure looking back, you guided me down some sort of a path. So
thank you too. And I hope to speak to you again. And hope maybe for 2 instead of 1 hour, or maybe 3.
I think 1 hour is more enough for most people. So.
Sometimes I feel like it just gets started then. So, but anyway, thank you too. And until the next time.
Thank you.
Ja, vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Mein Name ist Andrea Peters und ich bin Vorstandsvorsitzende des Medianet Berlin-Brandenburg, dem Unternehmensnetzwerk der Medien- und Digitalwirtschaft in der Hauptstadt. In diesem Podcast wollen wir euch die spannenden Unternehmen und Persönlichkeiten aus unserem Netzwerk vorstellen. Wenn ihr auch Interesse habt, Teil dieses Netzwerks zu werden, dann geht doch mal ins Internet auf www.medianet-bb.de, ruft uns an, schickt uns eine E-Mail, kommt zu unseren Veranstaltungen und wir freuen uns riesig, euch dort kennenzulernen.